This is Pillow Talk, brought to you by Killer and a Sweet Thing. I'm Eileen Kelly.
And I'm Jacob Safarian. On this podcast, we normalize sexual experiences by allowing the people who live them to speak for themselves.
On today's episode, we're joined by Jody Patterson. Jody is the mother of an 11-year-old transgender child. She is also an activist and author of The Bold World, a memoir of family and transformation. Welcome to Pillow Talk. So when did your son first tell you he was trans?
Well, in words or in actions?
Either or. I feel like maybe the first time you had like an inkling or the conversation with him.
When I look back, I'm much more clear. But in the process, it didn't seem as transparent. So I think, you know, from when Penelope was born, like this kind of, you know, chubby, bubbly baby and inquisitive and crawling around the floors and exploring, his favorite spot was the dishwasher. Like he'd somehow leave the dishwasher open and he'd make his way into the little resting,
the door. Thing on the floor.
Yeah. And like smile at me. And he was just really a bubbly baby. But then sometime in the first year, his personality shifted, right? And I'm saying he because he, but at the time I'm looking at my child and thinking this cute little girl, right, named Penelope. We named Penelope after our maternal grandmother. And so I'm thinking this girl is so cute and she's so bubbly. And then within the first year, Penelope started to protest, like protesting pretty much everything, it felt like. Diaper change was really difficult. So a lot of babies are squirmy. You know, I have five, so I'm not like,
you're unsure
about these things. But Penelope was like, you know, protesting any sort of attention to the body. So when we had to change Penelope's diaper, sometimes I would have to have Joe, my husband at the time, help. So I'd call in for backup and Joe would sort of hold Penelope still and I would change the diaper. It felt really awkward and didn't feel right. And Penelope was crying a lot. Bathing was not fun for Penelope. And then when we started like brushing teeth, or brushing hair, there was also this fight, right? Getting dressed was like, we never could get out of the house, right? Penelope would reject everything. This was like a no-go or that was a no-go. Nothing was right. And so I just kept thinking like, what is this kid's problem? Like we have such a great house and we have such a great family and we've got like this great, happy life. And why is Penelope so pissed off all the time? And so we tried all kinds of things. We changed bedtime. We did more naps. We did longer story time. I thought maybe I haven't read enough books, right? Maybe Penelope needs more attention, more love, longer hugs, snuggle time more. Took out dairy. I thought maybe it's a dairy allergy, literally. Like you know, you try as a parent, you try to think of all the things that could possibly be the
culprit.
The reason. Like, so all these like environmental things and we were really sort of convinced that if we just did a few switches here and there, Penelope would get back on track. And then it progressed. And so we tried to listen to Penelope a bit. And Penelope would say, I want to wear my brother's clothing. And so we kind of let Penelope wear some jeans and Penelope wanted to cut his hair. And so we cut Penelope's hair and Penelope wanted, you know, baggy jeans as opposed to skinny jeans. You know, we're talking a toddler. So, you know, these things weren't big deals, but they were a little annoying because I had all these vintage dresses and I had all these great ideas for ponytails. And, you know, I was just really excited to raise a girl. So Penelope's requests for different things were a little annoying, but they weren't that big of a deal. So we made these small changes and they never really, they pacified Penelope a little bit, but they didn't really get at the root of the problem. And so one day I remember Penelope just being really bad, knocking brother down, knocking blocks down, you know, sort of stampeding all around the house and just throwing himself to the floor. And I guess this is a confusing story because I say he, I cannot say she anymore. But at the time, Penelope in my head was this little girl who was temperamental and angry. And kind of sad. Mm-hmm. So I pick up Penelope off the floor one morning and I march us into Penelope's bedroom and I sit us down on the floor cross-legged and I was about to give us both a timeout because I was frustrated too. And I just said, Penelope, you know, what's wrong? Why are you so angry? Like, why are you angry all of the time? And it was like the first time I'd asked Penelope because I was prior to that just trying to fix things. First question I had asked ever. And Penelope, I remember, just started, like, tears filled up in Penelope's eyes, and they just started streaming down Penelope's face. And Penelope said, well, because everyone thinks I'm a girl, and I'm not. My kids are really verbal. All of them, except for one, spoke early, spoke in almost full sentences, had interesting concepts when they were, you know, still pipsqueaks. So the verbal ability wasn't surprising, but what Penelope said was surprising. Right? Everyone thinks I'm a girl, and I'm not. So I'm quickly trying to put that in my brain and put it in perspective, and I'm thinking, oh, okay, we've got a kid who's recognizing sexism. She probably notices the difference between tough boys and weak girls, and she wants to be tough. So I thought, okay, maybe I have a lesbian. Maybe I have a radical girl, radical woman. And so I quickly said, you know, however you feel is fine, baby. It's what's on the inside that counts. If you feel like a boy, go ahead and go for it. And then Penelope said, no, Mom, I don't feel like a boy. I am a boy.
Wow.
Which was like, you know.
It's crazy. Also so young to just, you know, you know.
And also, I mean, what I've heard since then is that the brain starts to identify at 3 around that time. So that process is what happens in everyone's brain. At around 3, we start to place ourselves in the context of the world. So actually, Penelope was right on track in terms of how the human body works. But Penelope was really verbal, and Penelope was really clear, and Penelope understood the difference between, like, feeling and being, which was pretty complex, right? I don't feel like a boy. I am a boy.
Yeah.
That was the big reveal.
What was your thought when he first said that to you? Did you have any personal knowledge of the trans community at that time?
I was selfish. I thought about myself. I thought, oh, I failed. Right? I thought I had failed to raise a feminist. I thought, this girl doesn't even want to be a girl. She's not even looking forward to being a woman. You know, what about Shirley Chisholm? What about Billie Jean King? What about Nina Simone? I thought we had dropped the ball on raising a feminist. And so I was still thinking about myself and my own perspective. I could not understand what Penelope was saying. I knew that it was something bigger than what I originally thought, but I wasn't aware of trans at the time. I think I had a very small perspective of gender nonconforming folks, right? I remember flashing in my head Paris is Burning and The Silence of the Lambs, where this Paris is Burning was like this really beautiful documentary about gender nonconforming kids in the West Village. Beautiful but sad story. Many of them died. That flashed in my head. My kid is going to have that path. I remember thinking that the family even might be doomed because of the association with this, that Penelope may die. I mean, that was like a real thought. And then I remember thinking Silence of the Lambs, where the psychopath is in the mirror tucking his private parts and dancing. And I thought that could be what we're looking at.
Those were the cultural touchstones at that time for this community.
Yeah. So we cried together in the room. And then I just listened. I didn't have much to say. I didn't know much. I couldn't say anything. So I just sat there with Penelope. It felt like an hour or so. And Penel would say things to me about his thoughts. He was basically sharing with me things that he had never told anyone. He said, Mom, I love you, but I don't want to be you. I want to be Papa. And then he said, you know, I don't want tomorrow to come because tomorrow my body will look like yours. And then I remembered, when we're with our kids, some of the things we say, we don't realize the impact. And I remember we would tease, maybe we just, you know, we're about a family that is unashamed of our bodies. And so we get dressed together, or we take baths, you know, somewhat out in the open when they're younger. I'm talking little toddlers, of course. And I would say, oh, you're going to grow up to look like Mama, you know. You're going to have a body like Mama's. And so that remained in Penelope's head, and he didn't want that. So I remember him saying, I don't want to be you. I want a doctor to make me a peanut.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. In that room that day, that first conversation.
I think it really goes to show he was thinking about this prior, too.
So much time. Yeah. I was getting like almost like the tip. Like mm-hmm. He had just couldn't.
Like it just overflowed.
It overflowed, yeah.
Yeah. Did you notice a shift in his behavior after you had this conversation?
I noticed a shift in my behavior. So after Penelope said, I am a boy, we left the room and I sort of proceeded like business as usual. And I told Dad, Penelope wants to be a boy. I got this. Don't worry about it. You take the other kids. I'll handle this for a while. And we kind of high-fived each other and went on about our parental duties of, you know, parents of multiple kids. And I protected that conversation for a long time. I didn't want people to take it and like muddle it, almost like a game of telephone when you tell someone something that's really important. And by the time the last person hears it, it sounds different. And I knew it wasn't going to be easy for anyone to hear what I had heard because I was the only one in the room with Penelope. So I kept it to myself and I just did a lot of research and I did the internet.
Yeah. What did the process of that look like?
It was dark. It was really dark. There's not, I mean, there's a lot of information out there. And so you're weeding through bad stuff and good stuff and doctors saying that it's a condition and that it needs to be fixed.
Correct.
And that, you know, maybe it was the fault of the mother. Or maybe there's a surge of hormones and maybe, you know, there are a lot of places to feel guilty.
Or like, my child grew out of it. I'm sure there's forums or this is what you do, X, Y, and Z.
Yeah. Speculation. Right, around that it might be a phase or that may be the parents' fault. Or, and so I just thought, well, let me at least do like Malcolm Gladwell says of 10,000 hours to be an expert in anything. So I said, okay, I'll do 10,000 hours around transgender because if nothing else, I need to just, you know, find out, know something more. Like if my daughter is actually my son, what else don't I know? So I used it as a time to really learn some things. And so then at a certain point of, you know, piling on the information, I kind of got a moment of being disgusted with the information, you know. It just didn't feel true to Penelope. It felt really clinical. So I stopped and I I think at that point I kind of broke down a bit. I broke down a bit. And I went back down south to see my mom. And we spent a lot of time looking at pictures and thinking about who our relatives are and were. You know, I have a lot of Southern relatives and civil rights leaders and civil rights activists. And my grandmother, Dr. Blackwell, Gloria Blackwell, was prominent in the civil rights movement. And my uncle, Gil Scott Heron, was a protest singer and has songs like "The Revolution Will Not Be Televised." And so I really thought about them, you know, and how they've changed America and changed the world. And I thought, oh, maybe Penelope is a revolutionary. You know, maybe he's someone who does not go with the status quo. He just goes with what's inside of him. So that's what I think, that was the biggest change, that I kind of got to a point where I thought activism is probably the best way to approach this. Before that, I wasn't at all thinking about activism.
Yeah.
And when did the decision come to start using he, him pronouns for Penelope? Is that something Penelope brought up? Because I think language is something so complex, but it's also so important when it comes to expressing yourself. So is that a conversation you opened up with him or?
So it is complex, right? Language is.
These are heady ideas.
You know, you think at three, you're going to be talking about like cute things with your kids, right? Bedtime stories and fairy tales and colors and, you know. And then you get into this moment, you're put in a moment where you have to talk about identity. And so language came up early because in our family, we have lots of different languages that we speak. Penelope's father's side of the family is African from Ghana and Canadian. And then there are some Egyptians in there. And then on my side, we're Southern and Black. And then on my daughter's, my first husband is Swiss and Vietnamese. So we've got lots of languages, lots of cultures. And one of the things that I thought about is that language is flexible. So not all languages use gender pronouns. So when Penelope's grandfather from Ghana was coming to live with us, we had this brilliant idea that we would just not talk about gender as a complex topic. We wouldn't even say the word transgender. We would just ask Dr. Garte, grandfather, we call him Dr. G, if he would please be so kind as to just say he instead of she, and we downplayed it. We said, because Penelope just likes that.
And was he receptive to that?
We were so nervous. And he literally said, sure, no problem. He's like, I don't even, you know, use gender pronouns. Like, I'm confused by them. They don't make any
sense to me.
Difference or sense to me either way. So, you know, here's this, he was an eye surgeon and well-educated and world traveler, but the language around gender didn't matter to him, right? So in that moment, we realized, oh, there are places that are flexible that we can use as entry points for this really huge topic, right? And so I think we didn't, as a family, we didn't have a hard time saying, conceptually changing she to he. Now, the tongue always got confused. We tripped over. I still trip over. I literally sometimes say
she. Penelope is a name that I know, traditionally belonged to someone who uses those pronouns. But then again, maybe not in 2019 right? On. Yeah.
Like, so many names. Jody, my name, goes both ways. But Michelle, you know, goes both ways. But I think sometimes the brain is conditioned and the tongue becomes used to certain things. And the heart sometimes moves differently. So my heart was with Penelope as boy. I identified with my son. I wanted to support my son, but my tongue kept tripping over itself. And so I'd always have to say, Penelope, you know I love you. You know I see you as a boy. I'm so sorry I make these mistakes. Please just give me some time. And he'd say, it's okay, Ma, it's cool. I know you don't mean it. And he would be very generous with me.
That's amazing. What about Penelope's siblings? Did you have conversations with them about his identity?
Yeah, we did. So he has four siblings, one younger and three older. And the first kind of group conversation we had was set up around Jazz. So Jazz was at the time one of the only sort of prominent trans kids. And Jazz had a television show and all these like great interviews. I think Oprah interviewed Jazz and tons of people. So we sat down. Dad was gone. I think Dad was like working, and I had the three little ones. And I thought, okay, here's a great time for me to, you know, take hold of the situation. And so I did a quote unquote movie night, and I didn't ask anyone what movie they wanted to watch. I just put on a series of Jazz episodes. And we sat and we were snuggled on the couch and we watched Jazz. And Jazz is phenomenal. I mean, as a young kid, Jazz was like, look, my brain is female. My body is perhaps different. But you guys have to just understand, I'm a girl. My brain is female, she would say. And so I thought, wow, so Jazz, this kid, has it together, you know. And the family was really supportive. Jazz's family was 100% behind Jazz. And I thought, we should be that proud. We should be that convinced, we should be that supportive, we should be that outspoken as Jazz's family is. So they really stepped me up, because I felt a little bit ashamed watching Jazz's family and then seeing how we were kind of half-stepping with Penelope. In that first night when we were watching series after series of Jazz, Penelope said for the first time, Mama, I'm like Jazz. I'm transgender like Jazz. So that was the first self-recognition in full language.
And do you think that's because he saw the language on a cultural screen that he was sort of able to understand it?
Representation.
Like identify with it, yeah.
Totally. We need to see ourselves. You know, it's almost like this this great, beautiful quote that nothing exists until I see it. Right? So yes, things are out there in the world and there is that reality, but the reality within yourself needs your eyes and your awareness. And so when Penelope saw Jazz on television and when Penelope saw Jazz's mom saying, I'm 100% behind you, Penelope got the okay. Yeah.
To be himself.
To just be it and to say it. It was like, yep, I'm trans. That's me.
Yeah. Was there any moment of confusion with the other kids? I mean, they were pretty young. So how did you work through that?
The youngest is a couple of years younger, and it's interesting. I don't have a point of demarcation around transition. I can't say today we woke up and said, okay, Penelope is a trans boy. You know, it was very sort of
a flow.
It was a process. And I wanted to actually, I intentionally said, look, I want to make this so seamless that it doesn't feel forced. It just feels right. And so day by day, month by month, year by year, we incorporated trans into our life. And sometimes it felt awkward, sometimes it felt flowy. But I remember one day saying to the kids, it was New Year's, and I said, this is ridiculous. We don't have any other people in our lives that are trans. Like, Penelope can't be the only trans person in the world. Shame on us. We have no other gender nonconforming friends or relatives that we know of. We are going to find ourselves new friends that represent
who we are and our family.
And Penelope. And my words were kind of clunky. I said, go find new friends. Make sure they're trans, okay? And my kid said, that sounds horrible, Mom. It sounds weird and clunky. And I said, I don't know how to say it any other way, but our world is too small.
And community is so important.
So important. So we went that year. We found a transgender family sleepaway camp. All of us went. The whole family. So grandmothers, siblings, parents, cousins. And you don't quite know who is gender nonconforming. You just know this family, someone in this family is. And the kids get together and they do their thing and the parents get together and they...
And they talk it out and...
Yep.
All the things that I'm sure come up and all the questions.
And it's like a weekend, right, of just hanging out. So we've been doing that for 5 years now, 6 years. And then we found like a day programs where we would go and have conversations with other parents at night or during the day. And Penelope found peer groups that he would sit in on and have and hang out with and play with. And, you know, my friends are now very diverse. It sounds... When I look back on my previous life, everyone looked like me. I looked on my Facebook and everyone was black and female and educated and cisgender. And I thought, that's ridiculous, right? So I would say that although it's an overused word, diversity, I have tried to diversify my life. And my friends are quite diverse now. I mean, I know adults who are trans. I know I have adults who are trans, who are cis, who are bi, who are straight, who are intersex, who are gender nonconforming, non-binary, you know. And of course, we don't sit down and we don't talk about these things necessarily over dinner. We're not eating, you know, non-binary food. We're just friends. But, you know, I it's important that you have friends that are diverse.
100%. And represent, you know, your worldviews and then allow you to learn more about people's experiences from their firsthand.
Totally.
And you really can't oversell representation. I mean, for me, growing up as a little gay kid in the South, to see older gay men or gay women together and be like, oh, I can have a life.
That was, I think, one of the biggest turning points for me. Basically, this whole story that I'm telling you is less of, I'm telling less of Penelope's story. That's for him to tell when he's of age and perhaps wants to tell it. But what I really have taken from this is what it has done to me, my transition, right? Mm-hmm. So I really tried to let Penelope be who he is, as he is, and not have to shift himself for anyone. And I wanted to shift around him, right? I wanted to shift the world around him, shift my bias, shift my practices, shift the way my family spends money. We reallocated money. You know, it's like a company. You have to reallocate money to different needs, right? So I've taken money from certain departments in my family and put it towards transgender sleepaway camp, non-negotiable. And I've changed language in my house. I have self-examined, right? Figured out that I'm non-binary, right? This is not even about like them versus us, like the LGBT community versus us. I think of this as we are non-binary. We are trans. We are black. We are Muslim. There is no other for me anymore. And I don't mean that in terms of I'm co-opting someone else's identity. I mean that as in this struggle that we have to see it as we. And the same thing that a trans person like my son wants is the same thing that I want, which is self-identity. So I really don't, I try not to, it's impossible for me as a mother to separate myself from my kids.
Of course.
You know, so I really have taken.
You carried them.
Yeah, I've carried them.
Yeah.
It's true, yeah. Literally and metaphorically.
I'm curious about those angry habits Penelope had before he realized his identity. Have you noticed a shift in his behavior after, you know, your family has begun to embrace him for who he is?
Yeah. So he was angry, disruptive, a bully on the playground, pushing kids, a bully at home, knocking down blocks, you know, smacking my hand away when I would try to brush his teeth with the princess toothbrush, you know. kicking and screaming when I tried to put the pink butterfly diapers on. And then as soon as I said, I am with you and we will, whatever it takes, you know, I don't know what it's going to take, but I'm here with you completely. I saw a change in that moment in the bedroom when I said, I'm with you. He just hugged me, right? And he wasn't the kid who wanted, he was the kid who wanted to punch me before. And then he hugged me. So that was the first change. He physically became closer to me. And then as we started saying he and Penelope, my son, and Penelope, you can go to the boys section and pick anything you want, jeans, sweaters, right? He started smiling. So I saw a lightness in his personality. And now, you know, he's 11. He's a A student. He's a karate champion. He's president of his class. He's a confident kid. He's probably the most giddy out of all the kids. He's talkative. Oh, and the other thing, he's really thankful. Like, he notices effort. So if I send the kids to camp, he will say, "Mom, thank you for sending me to camp. I appreciate the effort it took to pay for camp." I mean, what kid says this, right? He's really a thankful kid, I think, because he sees effort. He recognizes effort because he was in the process of my transition. So he's like this kid who's really aware. It's kind of beautiful.
I mean, were you ever met with, like, outside of the family, with your community? Did you have any, or not even your community, but, like, the school system? Did you have any, like, nerves or doubts about that he would be accepted?
I was nervous, yeah. I was nervous that our family would be ostracized or pushed out. I was nervous that Penelope would be hurt or put in danger. I was nervous that he would be seen as ugly or weird. You know, I just didn't think that he would be accepted or loved, even just on a fundamental level. And in that time, I remember making our community really small. So I had friends, and we stayed close to our friends, and we had family, and we stayed close to our family. And we found this school in Brooklyn that's in Crown Heights, and it's a small private school. And we stayed close to that school. My community at the time, when I was still new to this, was home, school, family. That was it. Mm-hmm. It was tight and small, and I didn't want to go anywhere else. During that time, we revealed a little bit at a time to people. So at home, I would talk about it. At the dinner table, I would talk about it. I would flesh out ideas. I would use the word transgender. But when we went outside, I would use it a little bit less frequently, right? And I would, at school, I would just say, "Well, it's complicated. Penelope likes to wear jeans." It took me a while to really let people in because I didn't know what their reaction would be. And I was scared. But when we did finally tell the school, a couple of things happened. A few families walked away. They said, "We can't be a part of this. You know, we don't believe in this." So we lost a few families at school. I'm sure we lost some friends. Some friends questioned why it was important to me to use the word or to make a big fuss about it. Some people thought I was encouraging it or pushing it, and they just, not so much in a aggressive way, but in a very, they ghosted us, a few people.
Wow.
But I would say there are more people that supported than didn't. So I can probably list on my hands a few kids teased Penelope, you know, and I was prepared for that. That's why my shoulders were always hunched. That's why I was, you know, really stressed. That's why I probably had a bottle of wine every night before going to bed. I was prepared for the world to say no. So what was a great surprise was when the school principal said, 100%, I think Penelope is a prophet, and I'm here for him.
Wow.
Yeah. I was like, I remember that day as like just golden, you know.
So was there a shift of like, he can use whatever restroom he wants to use? Like, that was just a no-brainer for the school that you had chosen?
Yeah. The school is a small school. They actually happen to have single bathrooms.
Oh,
so awesome. It's set in a brownstone, and it's the bathrooms are single. They don't have sports teams. They do things as groups, not as boys versus girls. So a lot of the logistics of that were really easy for us. And it's not for most people. A lot of schools have a harder time adjusting bathrooms and sports teams. But my suggestion is always to model it after my school. So my school is called McAdamy, mm-hmm. School of Science and Technology, and it's in Brooklyn. And it is the highest example of acceptance because it's a small community. We know each other first as people, as humans, as friends, by first name. High level of respect for each person. Teachers actually hold hands with the students. You know, there's a lot of physical love. There's a lot of emotional attachment to each other. So I always say to folks, it can be done. We can support in a school setting. We just have to make the environments feel intimate and small. Penelope was never denied bathroom, never denied the ability to present as he wanted. My school, they wear uniforms. Penelope has worn a boy's uniform. Even before Penelope came out as he, He was wearing a boy uniform. The school was like, yeah, it's fine. Let her wear a boy's uniform. No big deal.
It's amazing.
Yeah, they were really flexible with us.
A lot of support.
And it was, you know, a lot of support. It was surprising because the community is predominantly West Indian in this part of Brooklyn. And it's also strongly Jewish, Hasidic Jews live in that neighborhood. And so I thought, this is going to be complicated, right? Very traditional, two very traditional groups, you know, and then my son, Penelope, right? And oh, by the way, Penelope doesn't want to change his name.
Yeah, we were wondering about that.
He loves his name.
Yeah, he loves his name.
He's named after his grandmother. He's like, I love her. It's my name. Why would I change it?
It's interesting because you would think that a lot of individuals would want to change their name because gender is so closely tied to names. But you've created this space for Penelope to be all like, no, this is my name and this is my gender and it's not an issue.
Yeah, I actually suggested it. Silly mom who knew nothing back in the day. I suggested, maybe you want to change your name to a more boyish name, right? My language is all wrong. And Penelope looked at me so weirdly and said, well, you know, if they want to call me Jack, I guess they could. And he laughed. But he said, I really like my name and I want to keep it. And it just proved to me again and again that there is no one way, right? Some people don't want their name and they want to change it. Some people are fine with their name. And Penelope has been able to, like you said, we've said, Penelope, do you however that looks like. So Penelope has stayed artistic, loves to write short stories, loves my expensive lotions in my bathroom, you know. But Penelope wears jeans and cutoff shorts and, you know, basketball jerseys. Penelope's great at math and writing. Penelope is fantastic at karate and talking. So like some things that people might consider feminine qualities and some people might consider the others masculine, Penelope's got both. Yet and still he is definitively boy.
Did you ever encounter anyone who said these are serious decisions to make and Penelope is so young? How do you respond to critics like that?
A lot of people have said, shame on you parents. Child is too young to make these warped decisions, right? I remember reading a response online. I usually read all of the responses just to see where the gaps are in the conversation. Like at a certain point, I was like, you know, I'm very confident in my parenting. I'm very confident in my son and I believe my son. So everything else was sort of like
background noise.
No, it was not background noise. It was information to find out where the gaps lie in the conversation. Because my ultimate goal is to let the world understand what I know. Like to help the world understand that there is gender diversity. So I read the comments and the comments are really ugly and they're nasty. And they say, you know, in my house, my children can only decide their bedtime story. This dumb mother is letting them decide their gender. How cruel, right? Or, oh, yes. And I heard this other quote. They said, oh, yeah, I know Jodi Patterson. She's that weird white woman, right? So that was really interesting to me. That comment was really interesting. One, because it was so ignorant. They hadn't even scrolled down to see my picture, right? But beyond the ignorance around it, it was telling that a lot of us believe that this contemplation of gender belongs to only a certain group, perhaps white people. That Black folks really need to focus on gun control and housing crisis and mass incarceration. These are really important issues within the Black community. And perhaps gender is not one of those, right? And so I've heard time and time again that this particular fetish that I have with my son is a white person's issue. And I should move past it and recognize that my daughter needs me to be a strong parent, right? So with that, you know, those kinds of...
What do you say to that?
I don't respond to those necessarily, but in my advocacy, I use that information because there's a divide on race in this world. There's a divide on gender. There's a divide around class, right? And so until we really see those divisions, we can't really talk. We can't really get to the bottom of it. We can't get to the root of the issue. So as much as I want to say that this is just bad people don't like Penelope and good people love Penelope, it's not true. We have these blocks that are not allowing us to really communicate with each other. And they are around race, gender, class, identity. And so I don't really shy away from those topics anymore. I really dive into them.
Yeah.
Intersectionality is, you know, the big topic that we really need to discuss. How does race, overlapped with class, overlapped with gender, overlapped with regionality, affect us? And if you can't peel those layers off, then you really can't see me. The comments are nasty, but they are informative. Yeah.
Of what you're working to, you know, mm-hmm. kind of even out.
Yeah.
Educate.
It has become that much more important for me to educate. So I let, it's like, you know, people say, when did Penelope transition? Well, Penelope has pretty much always been Penelope. I transitioned mm-hmm. in that room when Penelope was three. That's my key thing. Like, let's move the world out of the way so Penelope can just be Penelope. And let's, as adults, do the hard work, right, of changing our bias.
Are there moments, though, because I'm curious, you've created such a safe environment for Penelope with your family and you found such an amazing school. But I'm sure the headlines mm-hmm. and our political situation isn't lost on you. Are there moments where you worry about Penelope's safety when he goes out into an environment that you can't control or curate?
Yeah. So there were years when I cried every day. And then there were several years when I just didn't feel sad anymore, right? I was really feeling strong and I was feeling confident and capable. And then recently when Trump sent out the message that he wanted to revoke protection for anyone who was trans and anyone who was gender nonconforming, I remember that day I cried. I thought, oh shit, you know, now we're back in that place where I don't even know what it looks like. What is the future going to be for Penelope? Because, you know, I still haven't changed Penelope's documents. I haven't changed Penelope's gender markers on passport, on birth certificate. And I haven't felt the urgency to do it right yet. I've got a lot on my plate with five kids. So maybe a little bit of my mistake. But I got to that point. I woke up that day when I read the news and the administration was using wording like clear science, you know. And I thought, oh, shit, we're really in trouble. And I remember not telling Penelope what was going on at that moment. It was just too heavy. It's really hard to tell a kid that people don't like you.
Because of something you can't control.
Yeah. And it's too much for, you know, 7 years old, 8 years old, 11 years old. I have children in my house. And so to say that the president and the administration and many people in this world don't want to see you live the life they live. They don't want to see you live, actually. It's not something that a parent easily says to a kid, and I chose not to. What I do choose to do is share with Penelope and his siblings that human rights are for everyone. So I take the topic off of Penelope, the trans kid, and I move the topic to human rights and civil rights. In that sense, I can talk about the fact that we as a family stand up for all human rights. We stand up for all injustices, and we fight for equality so that everyone in the family and in the world can be embraced into the society. So I don't really talk about Penelope as the victim. That spotlight is too much for Penelope. But it has become a directive of our family to fight against injustice. Yeah. At this moment, he doesn't want to be a spokesperson. So, you know, people have said, oh, well, how does Penelope feel about maybe talking to us about being trans, or how does Penelope, you know, do in front of a camera? And I'm like, it's not at all what he wants. In fact, he feels that the conversation is a little bit boring, he said to me.
He's it's like, so I want to be a kid. Yeah. I just want to be me.
Janet Mock is my friend and Teek Milan is my friend, and they are advocates, very strong and prolific and smart advocates. So Janet Mock came over one day and was talking to Penelope, and I said, you know, you might not want to ask the question of like what it's like to be trans, right? And Janet is sensitive, and so, but we had this like great moment where Janet and Penelope and I were all kind of talking, and Penelope said, you know, it's boring. This conversation around gender is boring. And I said, well, what do you mean? If I wanted you to talk about like what are those games that they play, like anime or, you know, you would think it was boring, Mom. Like, these aren't things that adults are into, but I'm not into the conversation of gender, right? He said, the conversation of gender is boring, Mom. And I think that's where it should be. It shouldn't be this necessity to break down gender the way we've broken it down. It's a little bit, it gets in the way of life. But I told him, until everyone is treated equally, until there is no more LGBT hatred, until there are no more deaths and killings and murders of Black trans women, then I will talk about it. So I've given him permission to not grab a microphone, not be a public advocate, and I do all that work.
That's amazing, because he should be able to just live his life and just be a kid.
Yeah, and he just wants to do the simple things.
How old is he now?
He's 11, so he's really, he's really into his homework. He loves his homework.
And karate and playing with his siblings.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is some of his classmates have chosen to be advocates. So they raise their hand and they say, I am a self-proclaimed LGBT advocate. And it was because of Penelope. And so, so each kid takes a different path. Penel is just not the one that wants a microphone. He just wants to just do his thing.
And isn't that the dream, that as allies, we can do the work for people who are being targeted and marginalized?
Mm-hmm.
We can take our privilege and say, let me fight for you.
Yeah. A lot of the change that has happened in my life came from Penelope being who he is and me saying, let me do this for you. Because as a mom, you want to protect your kids. And that never changed, right? And so I wanted to protect Penelope. And so I decided that I would take the lead. And I've joined the board of the Human Rights Campaign, which is our largest organization that stands for LGBT rights. I work with Mount Sinai in the developmental process of their transgender center. And I work with a great organization called the Ackerman Institute's Gender and Family Project. And these are three organizations that really promote, protect, support the lives of our LGBT community. And I work closely with them. And to me, when I look at where I was and where I am now, I'm so proud of our family. I mean, we really have redirected ourselves, right, to be better than we were before and to do more than we've done before. But it's a slippery slope, because I always want to be out in front, but I also don't want to use my privilege where it's not necessary. So as a cis woman, there's a privilege that comes with that. And many trans people can take the microphone. I want them to take the microphone and speak. I want to make sure that I'm not grabbing the microphone out of someone else's hand who should be speaking firsthand. Yeah, it's tough. We have to be very conscious. It's not just me. We as people have to be more conscious than ever before. People are less willing to put up with mistakes and put up with sloppy behavior and put up with pushy behavior. And I think not just cis people, not just men, but all of us need to be very aware of other people's needs. And so as an advocate, I try to be aware of my kids' needs first, right? And then the world's.
Yeah. I think your position is really unique as a parent. And I feel like helping guide other families who are going through a similar situation. What kind of advice would you give to other mothers out there, or parents in general?
First thing I would say is to listen. You know, as parents, most of the time we feel like we know the answer, or at least we know what the shape of the answer looks like. You know, we've done almost everything before, and so we feel like we know it. But we really need to stop and listen. I mean, our kids are telling us something that we are not familiar with, right? So if you feel that your kid may be gender nonconforming, maybe trans, maybe gay or bisexual, we don't know. I mean, we're looking at our kids and we have questions running through our mind. And so I think the best thing is to turn off a bit and just sit quietly with your kid. It's something we don't even do a lot in this busy world. But sitting down in that room with Penelope changed my life. I stopped talking and I just sat quietly with Penelope. So I think we need to give our children space to talk and to share. We have to listen. I think then once we have an inkling, we have to do the work, right? This is not going to be something we naturally quickly understand, but through research, through books and on the internet, there are a lot of organizations that can help. We have to do the 10,000 hours of research, imperative. And then we have to build community. So we have to find organizations that have peer groups and family groups. We have to find, the trans family sleepaway camp in whatever form it is for you. We have to create community. And that might be sticking close to your family. But it also might be finding chosen family.
Yeah.
But so community is important. Research and knowledge is important. And listening is important. Those are the three things. And with that, you will find a way to support your kid and to save the life of your kid and to allow your kid to thrive. There's not one way. You know, coming in with answers will not serve you. You got to give it some time.
And it's very inspiring.
Thank you.
You must be so proud on some level that you've created this environment where Penelope could articulate things, like you said, these very complex ideas about identity.
So, you know, it's funny that you say that because it, you know, a lot of people see the start of this story in the room when Penelope said, "I am a boy." And I've started to see the beginning of the story way back before that, like generations before. So I come from a family of really strong matriarchs. I come from a family of women who've done things differently all their lives. So my grandmother married 5 times. She married one guy twice. And I always thought, my grandmother's so interesting. She's beyond interesting. So 5 marriages, all of whom she loved. She was a civil rights activist. She had her PhD and her master's. During the time in America where Black women and Black men weren't even really thought to be deserving to go to school, right? She went on to be a professor. She is just was a really incredible woman. My mom married twice. My mom studied at the University of Strasbourg, Wesleyan, and Harvard. She studied French, right? For why, we don't know. And then she started a school in Harlem. My aunt chose not to marry at all. She wanted a child with no husband. She wanted love without legalities. And she wanted a career with no one telling her she had to do it their way. So I have women that have raised me that have gone against the grain. And I think watching them and being raised by them and listening to my uncle, Gil Scott-Heron, gave me at least the base to support my kid. So when Penelope said, "I am a boy," I didn't know what that meant, but I knew about support. I knew about internal compasses. I knew about revolution. I knew about transition. I knew about, so these are some things that I knew in like intrinsically, even though I couldn't put the words around what was going on. So I think what we need is to raise our children with some fundamentals, because there's always going to be a curveball. For me, the curveball was transgender, you know, and that might be passe, hopefully, you know, 30 years from now. Maybe no one's going to trip over that. It tripped me up. But the base level of what my parents gave me and my family gave me was that the revolution starts within, right? That we as individuals do have the right to be who we are, and the family will support that. So I was ready, in a sense, for Penelope. And that makes me really proud that my family was the key component to this story, mm-hmm. right? You know, it's not necessarily a story of Penelope. This is a story of family support. This is a story of women who are really strong. This is a story of revolution. This is a story of the right to be who you are. And so that's kind of, to me, the big smile on my face is that my family is really dope. I got a chance to really go back in time and look at who raised me. And I was like, God damn, I came from some great women, you know?
So. Right. So you have a book coming out.
Yes.
And so what was kind of the inspiration to put this all on paper? And do you want to walk us through, you know, what it's called and where we can get it and a little bit about it?
So The Bold World comes out January 29th. It's my first book. I am just so hella excited for it. It's a memoir, and it's the story of my family. It starts at the point when Penelope tells me he's a boy, and that knowledge takes me down. I stumble and fall down the rabbit hole, and I get to this place that's really dark. And in that moment, I go back home to the South where my mom is, and I investigate our family. And in the understanding of the family, I place Penelope in perspective, and I am able to then really support Penelope. So the writing of the book was therapeutic for me, right? The writing of the book, the family history, the connecting the dots between race and gender, right? Connecting the dots between oppression in the civil rights movement and oppression now in the gender movement. That process of writing helped to get me back on my solid feet. And so this book was cathartic for me. It's my story. It's my family story. And I hope that it's, you know, a place where people can even if they don't understand transgender, even if they're not interested, you know, that they can read the book and find something from it that will help them with their children or their lives. My agent was the first person who said, who asked me the question, who raised you? Maybe write a book about who raised you. That was the
starting point.
The starting point, yeah.
We're very excited to read it. Yeah, we're definitely.
I was cautious not to tell Pennell's story. You know, this, I don't want to, I mean, because you can only tell but so much about what's going on in someone else's life. So I was really telling the story of myself and of how I got to this place of transformation.
For more content on how sexuality dictates our lives, you can visit us at www.killerandasweetthing.com and follow us on Instagram at birds.bees. You can learn more about Jodi's work on her website and blog, georgiany.com, or follow her on Instagram at Jodi Patterson. You can also purchase a copy of her critically acclaimed book, The Bold World, on Amazon today. This is Pillow Talk.